Welcome back to You Can With AI, a seven-part series on artificial intelligence from KPMG that is part exploration, part blueprint, and focused on helping you and your organization fully leverage the AI opportunity. In this episode, we shift our attention from an inward examination of AI organizational development to an outward exploration of how AI is impacting some of the economy's most important sectors. To guide that journey, we're joined by Atif Zaim, Deputy Chair and U.S. Managing Principal-elect and U.S. Consulting Leader at KPMG. All right, Atif, welcome to You Can With AI. It's great to have you.
Thank you, Nathaniel. It's great to be here.
So we are going to talk today about some of where all of these topics that we've been talking about in the other episodes of the show resolve and meet the real world. We're going to be looking out, kind of going sector by sector, looking at how AI and agents are transforming things in practice now, the types of differences you're seeing, where some of these organizations are benefiting in discrete ways, and really just taking this from an internal-facing conversation to one that is external and competing in the market. Before we do that, I would love for you to just share the background and the context and the experience that you're bringing into this particular conversation.
Sure. So 30 plus years with the firm. I currently lead our consulting practice and about to go into our deputy chair and U.S. managing principal role for the firm overall. And in those 30 years, the bulk of that time has been spent helping clients think through the business issues that, whether it's regulatory drivers, technology drivers, competitive drivers, may be causing folks to address. And in this context, I feel that's really where the perspective that I'm bringing is going to be of value, of how it really impacts our clients' business and how they go about serving their clients and operating their businesses.
Wonderful. So let's start really broad. Let's talk about the landscape of AI and AI transformation right now. And maybe broadly speaking, where you see us in the development and the transformation that, you know, obviously we're all here about, we're a part of, but where do things stand, you know, at this moment?
So I would say we've now gone past the threshold of, hey, it's a new thing, promising technology, and it's really now most executives that I discuss it with, our surveys point out, believe that it's a real driver of value. So our latest survey says it's, you know, 93% of the leaders say that it gives them a competitive advantage, right? And that they're increasing investment in AI despite some of the economic uncertainties and using AI to help them navigate some of those economic headwinds, given that's a new thing. To just give you an example, we at KPMG are working with a life sciences and diagnostic client to help them with AI to optimize their supply chain purchasing and prevent overpurchasing and freeing up working capital, as an example. So you've gone from, hey, nice technology, I can see that there will be use cases, to actually, no, now I truly get it, and I'm using those use cases to come to life in smaller areas, but yeah, bring them to life. So that's one aspect of it. When you think about, okay, so then, and you might categorize that you could do things better, faster, cheaper, whether it's on the customer end, serving the customer experience, customer fulfillment, et cetera, or it is in the operation of your business, whether it's finance, technology, HR, et cetera. That's definitely starting to happen. When it comes to business model disruption, which I define as you have now fundamentally changed what an organization or, you know, maybe an entire sector now does for a living, what the elements of the value chain are and how do they link together now versus in the prior iteration, that it's still in its infancy, right? So for the large established industries, yes, there are some industries on the edges where you're seeing much more business model disruption, but we haven't yet seen companies breaking away from the pack yet where, hey, I've got a new business model and it's a killer app of this industry of meeting this client need.
Is it overly reductive to categorize these sort of very broadly as thinking about AI in terms of efficiency versus thinking about it in terms of growth in some ways? One being, we do what we've always done better, and the other being, we're really thinking differently about how to do what we do and even perhaps what to do.
I think it's It's an appropriate way to think about it. And in fact, having it in a couple of different categories is quite helpful. We certainly at KPMG, we do that way for our business, and we would advise our businesses, our clients rather, that way, because you will have those two different things happen. You will have the better, faster, cheaper thing, and you will have the business model disruption. And they may happen over a different time frame and scale, but you need to have your attention on both of them. And then whether it's advising clients or thinking about our own business, I think it's actually a really good way to think about it, because you might miss the other if you only focus on one.
And that's very helpful. Have you seen, you know, one of the things that you just argued, which is something that I certainly feel kind of day in and day out as well, is we've reached some inflection point where there's not really questions around whether and if this is going to be a highly disruptive force. It's more about the specifics and about turning it into action. Do you think that that mindset shift is broad? And do you see it actually changing how companies are engaging with the technology? Does it create a new either urgency or diligence or just different perspective? Now it's sort of like no longer a question around whether this is a novel, interesting thing, but is instead sort of accepted as a key part of the future of any given company.
So that's such an interesting question. And the answer to it may seem like you've heard this one before, Nathaniel, and in the context of technologies or other competitive developments that are entirely different than AI or generative AI. In fact, I'll go back to a conversation with a client this week, and they were describing something from several years ago, pre-gen AI revolution, if you like. And they were talking about, okay, what we realized, and it was a process, the details of it's not important, it was an insurance company, but they were talking about, hey, for me to achieve the benefit that I knew this technology, not Gen AI technology, different technology could achieve, I needed to re-architect how I did the work and change the behaviors of the individuals, retrain them in certain instances, and sometimes retraining our clients outside the enterprise to interact with the firm in a different way. And once we had gotten the hang of that, then the rest of it was actually easy. And I'm not going to suggest that getting AI to work or any technology to work is trivial. I do think making the changes in the way you do your business, how you reimagine the business processes, and how do you get the cultural buy-in, and how do you get the behavior change put in place, is the key to unlocking the value that you're going to get from this, or I would argue almost any other technology.
Yeah, again, this is something that we see a lot in our own work as well, that one of the key sort of pillars of companies that seem to be really starting to actually leverage the value of AI is that they've sort of embraced a mindset shift. They've done work to kind of bring in a broader culture shift, you know, not just from leadership, but also kind of from the bottom up with employees. And that perspective is the sort of basis from which they can then get into, all right, what are we actually going to do? What sort of new skills do we need? But it starts from that more fundamental piece. I wanted to maybe expand that into a question about what are some of the commonalities that you're seeing of the companies that are actually starting to leverage AI in really productive ways and find the competitive edge from this technology?
So I would say, I'll maybe take a step back and say, what are the most underserved problems that our clients or the economy as a whole has, or companies in the economy have? And it really comes down to, if it's a process that almost every company has, and it's performed pretty much the same in different companies, in different sectors in the economy, chances are that a really good solution to that already exists, a combination of people and technology. That doesn't mean that you can't improve it further, but the marginal returns are different than some sector-specific or sometimes company-specific issues or processes. And I'll give you an example to illustrate the point, right? So in the energy industry, there are parts of the value chain where companies are spending hundreds of millions of dollars on services performed in remote locations. And they're doing this in an environment where, to satisfy themselves that there isn't any contract leakage, is more costly than the contract leakage itself. I'm not saying that the contract leakage is small. It's just relative to the effort with existing technology to stop that leakage and to save that money, it's not, the ROI isn't quite there. And that's an example of where Gen AI and AI related technologies are changing the equation, where now you can do it, and now you can do it cheaper and faster. And actually, we have an example where we were in using the last generation of AI back in, all the way back like 8-9 years ago. We were trying to help them get to some automation that would help them identify leakages, and it just, you couldn't make the math work, right? It just, you know, you look back at it, you're like, I'm not sure it's worth it. Now we're back with the same clients, and now it's a very different dynamic. It's a very different economic equation. The ROI, because the I is lower, is much higher.
How much of the return and realized value that you're seeing is from broad changes to business process versus uncovering really discrete or industry or vertical specific use cases and opportunities like the one you just articulated, right? So on the one hand, you have just, you know, we can produce much more marketing collateral and we can reach out to more people because we have agent SDRs, and every company has some version of that, versus, you know, that type of example that you just gave, which is so specific and really unique, not something necessarily that a platform or a software provider would have thought of, but it is clearly, you know, an incredibly useful thing. What's the balance or sort of the distribution of those two types of use cases that you're finding coming to life at this stage?
I think you'll definitely have more of the ones that are in the broader category, where the software provider has thought of it, but maybe doesn't quite get there for the nuance of that particular industry. So I'll give you another example. This is a life sciences distributor company, and they have a process that they use, Salesforce in this case, and they use that to do their CRM and onboard their customer and, you know, mark them ready to trade and all those sorts of things. That onboarding process is almost entirely manual. And as you can imagine, you know, they need to do certain checks to make sure the person who's buying the pharmaceuticals is in fact a bona fide healthcare provider. So a pharmacy, a doctor, a hospital, et cetera. So that was a really highly manual process. It would take as much as 17 days, almost entirely manual. And whereas in the past, you might've said, well, I don't know if it's worth spending the money to accelerate that or to take out the manual labor. Well, 90 days, Nathaniel, that's what it took us. 90 days working with Salesforce and getting in to that time to be under 5 minutes, from 17 days to 5 minutes, and to get to a place where I think something like certainly over 2/3, maybe 3/4 can go through without really much manual intervention at all. We're always going to keep some human in the loop, but in terms of performing the processes and what have you, it's almost entirely automated. So that's an example. Like, every company onboards clients. Every company has some procedures that they have to follow to make sure, even if it's something simple as assigning a credit limit, for instance, right? There's going to be some procedures you're going to have to onboard a client. But in this case, the nuance for this particular industry meant that there wasn't something readily available off the shelf, and it needed to be a little bit of this agent-enabled extension of their platform that they were using to get them to this place where they're delighting the customers. They're getting onboarded really quickly. They can start. They're obviously reducing the cost of the manual labor that was being used to onboard the people. And they get to trade quicker, right? You get the client ready to trade and buy from them, et cetera. So, you know, path to revenue is faster.
So one of the things that I find really interesting is what you just described feels like, on some level, a low-hanging fruit type of use case for AI, a process that clearly has some automation opportunity. I mean, the benefit, just 17 days to 5 minutes, is super clear right away. And it's likely that other firms have versions of that. But to the extent that that is a type of low-hanging fruit, that type of process automation is a low-hanging fruit, there's still a huge amount of nuance and customization company by company, right? That has to do with the particular business environment they operate in, the particular regulatory environment, just peculiarities of their own, you know, process and data. How do you see firms, especially successful firms, handling that, the fact that even the low-hanging fruit use cases do involve some amount of technical complexity, some amount of customization. You know, is that a role for partners? Is that a role for ecosystems? You know, how are companies handling the fact that everything is somewhat more complicated than just, you know, buying a tool off the shelf and turning it on?
Yeah, no, I think in many instances, and oftentimes where we're involved, so plenty of companies, especially ones with large, diverse workforces where they have a lot of the expertise in-house, whether it's regulatory expertise, technology, or otherwise, they will tackle some of these themselves. And oftentimes they will use a partner, whether it's a tech vendor or somebody like us, to help take them through it. I will go back to oftentimes the expertise that certainly we bring to market is, yes, the technology expertise, yes, the process expertise, but also in terms of challenging some of the, what is your risk appetite? What is your trust appetite? And making sure that a brand like KPMG that is known for trust and trusted business practices can have a look at it and help you think through why it may be okay or why it is okay for you to go a little bit further in the automation, right? Because it's, you have to make sure that it's working the way it's intended, especially where you're interacting with customers and especially where you're in a regulated environment where you cannot really afford to make mistakes.
This has felt like one of the barriers so far is use cases that feel clear, but at the same time have just too high a burden of accuracy to really bear fruit right now. And maybe this gets me to another question that I had for you, which is, broadly speaking, how are companies, again, successful companies, dealing with the speed of change, right? Knowing that on the one hand, you can't wait for something to be perfect, but that there's a high probability that you spend a bunch of time customizing a solution that 6 or 12 months down the line, you know, OpenAI will have just released a version of it and you'll have spent all that money seemingly for nothing, but you will have that 6 to 12 months ahead of the people who waited. How are companies handling that, the sort of just the rate of change?
I think I would say two things. One of them is the obvious experiment, because that is important, certainly at this stage. I would say the successful companies are also looking at it as a learning and a almost like a cultural or a DNA change exercise. So the ROI may not necessarily come from the return on that specific process. Of course it will. But to your point, well, listen, if that investment was negated by some developments 6-9 months down the line, have you gotten any return from that investment? And I would posit, Nathaniel, that yes, you do. Because the return that you've gotten from it is your organization, your teams, your leaders have now experimented at a faster pace than perhaps they have done before. And as a result, that knowledge, that organizational memory is going to help you as those yet more innovations come to light in the technology. So I do think you've got to look at it differently. So not just the benefit you may get from the initial use case, but also the benefit that you might get from the learning and the behavioral change in the organization that allows you to create.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think it's maybe a bit of a cliched analogy, but there is an analogy with fitness and working out where a lot of the things that you do are invisible and, you know, just take a lot of time and strengthening your core. And then when it comes to race day, you're able to go faster because of that. And I think that a lot of those institutional muscles are being built right now. And in fact, I think one of the most encouraging things that I've seen is just the speed and diligence with which many enterprises have thrown themselves sort of headlong into this transformation and got, you know, dove in all the way with that knowledge in mind that it wasn't necessarily going to be strictly measurable ROI in the very short term, but they, you know, had a belief that it would manifest at some point.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
What patterns are you observing, maybe zooming out a little bit, industry by industry? Are there industries, broadly speaking, that are ahead or behind in their AI adoption? And what is it that sort of is leading them to that particular place?
So I will tell you, yes, we do see differences between sectors or industries. I would say in our experience, banking and technology are two industries that we feel are really getting into it and for different reasons, I would say. So banking, given how technology oriented, every industry is technology oriented, but they are particularly, and they are used to investing in the cutting edge technology So they're building on it. I mean, we've been working with banks on AI for over 10 years, right? So this is really almost a continuation of what they've been doing. So they've invested the money in modernizing the data, making sure it's well controlled, and therefore it's easier for them to take that next step. And we're doing some great work with them. We've got something with a bank with Google to have a commercial loan agent, as an example. When you have the data and you have the desire and the investment, you can, again, take a process that's reasonably manual today and automate it and do it in a way where you can get an ROI on that investment. They're looking at, in banking, a lot of the fraud prevention, security compliance, customer experience type things. Again, high volume, you know, fair amount of mix of structured and unstructured data where really AI can excel. I think we had something like 89% banking clients investing in AI for fraud and security measures, and then a big percentage planning to deploy it enterprise-wide in those areas. And we're working with our banking clients in that space. Technology is coming at it from a different lens. So technology companies are starting, as you could imagine, with their products first, right? So a lot of investment in AI enabling, AI enhancing, or side AI products that you're trying to make sure you don't get left behind in this race to this new environment, at least in enterprise software. So there's a lot of investment there. Interestingly, where if you go to the support functions and technology organizations, that's where it's more in the beginning, right? So we're just starting to work with some organizations where we're taking sometimes their own technology and trying to get that embedded in. And here I'm talking about things like HR and finance, right? Just to improve the simple, you know, cheaper, better, faster type things. Another area that it's kind of related to product development, but coding, I think you've covered that plenty on your podcast, Nathaniel, is something that obviously there's a lot of investment in, experimentation in, and some really good results in being able to bring products to market with some speed. Maybe pick one that's moving a little bit slower, and that's in healthcare. And that's for good reasons, right? A lot of the data that you're handling is very highly protected. And you see an interesting difference in terms of, it's not that those leaders don't understand the value of AI and what this technology can bring their company. I think it's something like 90% plus get it. Like, yeah, we see the value AI can bring, but a much lower percentage, like 60%, are saying yes, and I'm going to experiment with it this year or next year. And I think that's really reflective of the regulatory environment and the information protection, data protection type environment that they operate in, where they're naturally and understandably taking a more cautious approach to it.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think that that's a great example. And I would almost say that the fact that healthcare is an example of moving slowly shows you just how fast things are moving, right? Because in the last 6 months, I've seen probably 4 different healthcare AI summits that I've been invited to, and there's conversations constantly, and you see a lot of these sort of custom shops, they're getting in there and starting to experiment. But I think that you're right that just structurally, there are real limits and barriers to what people feel that they can do. And so they're slow walking a little bit. But, you know, I think it's just reflective of, you know, the slow walk in this area is very different than slowness in technology adoption, perhaps in previous technologies.
They're probably moving at the same speed, but they're with their environment, it's like on a moving walkway that's running in the other directions.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. Yeah, great visual.
Yeah.
How has economic uncertainty, emerging economic uncertainty, change the equation, change the conversations that you're having?
So it certainly adds that additional layer of complexity. So on the one hand, you know, with the new tariffs coming into play, that creates a new use case for AI to help clients get to that decision-making support in terms of how are you going to move the supply chains, what decisions you're going to make around pricing versus absorbing it in the margin, etc. We have a tool, as an example, it's called the Tariff Modeler, AI enabled, that we're taking to a number of clients and doing some good work helping them think through some of those things. So that's the one aspect of it. The other aspect of it, it's a little bit, you know, creating a little bit of uncertainty. The one thing that's interesting is that when it comes to AI, it seems to me at least, that it's almost achieving that slightly protected status to say, hey, let's not cut back spending in this area because of how critical it is to our future or might be to our future. So I'm not saying it's universal, but certainly we've seen some evidence of, you know, let's maybe, you know, not spend as much on other areas given the uncertainty, but let's not cut this back too much.
Yeah, I think that it puts a fine point on the value of increased efficiency, right? One answer to economic insecurity and uncertainty is more resilience, and, you know, more efficiency tends to lead to more resilience. And so I think that we're certainly seeing that as well. And the other sort of big force or big change trend that I wanted to ask you about was agents. And do you see, or I guess maybe how are agents shifting the nature of these conversations? For example, do you find that they are nudging people from that sort of strict efficiency mindset to thinking in terms of growth and business model disruption and just new opportunities?
I think so. Although I would say it's a matter of degree. It's not that folks weren't thinking about the business opportunities. You mentioned the example of developing marketing collateral way quicker, so you can get it out quicker and you can grow faster in a shorter period of time than you would have been before. So that certainly is continuing. But this is allowing clients to do, companies to do, is to get there a little bit faster and further. That's the further point is the important one. So instead of, if you go back to the example I was mentioning before of this life sciences distributor, instead of doing all the analysis and what have you for the client to say, okay, the client's good, and then somebody coming in and coding it in and saying, yes, you're ready to trade, the agent can take it further to say, if everything is in order and I reviewed it, the agent or the software has, now the agent can go actually update the systems, create the new client, and then do the right thing. And obviously, you've got to make sure that you've got human in the loop. You got to make sure that it's within your risk tolerances and QA and all that sort of stuff in there, but it allows you to go a little bit further. And that's really capturing the imagination of a lot of our clients, the executives, to say, oh, wow, that can really, so now you don't have to wait for somebody to review what the AI did and then take action on it. If it's within certain parameters, you can go ahead and take the action. The agent can take the action.
I think that those, we're still just nudging into these sort of advanced layers of autonomy. You know, in some ways, I think we're barely scratching the surface of it yet, but already seeing just how very, very small degrees of additional autonomy can make huge changes in what's possible. You know, as we start to round up here, what are some of the areas, what are some of the smart investments that you see your clients who are most on the cutting edge and thinking about this, you know, in the most diligent ways, what are the types of investments they're making over, you know, the course of the rest of this year?
So I think at the highest level, Nathaniel, you have to come back to how are you going to make your company an AI-enabled company? So you see a lot of investments around. So listen, there are going to be killer use cases, really good apps you can develop with it, specific business processes that you can automate, serve your clients, delight your customers, and what have you. And clearly, those are going to be there, depending on industry, depending on type of company, size of company, et cetera. But across the board, if you can make your company, more organization, more AI-enabled, more AI-ready, more nimble and agile, thinking through how you can change things that you've done the same way 10, 15, 20 years, if you can do that, you will be successful. And you will be one step ahead of the competition. So the wisest investments that I see are in that area, that pervasive, let's change that. And I was in a conversation again recently with a client where I was sharing how even leaders within our firm, it doesn't have to be about us, but you know, generally where people are making those sorts of investments, it has to rise up to the leadership level, right? So I am using AI to do my work on a daily basis. This is not just about writing emails, but actually, you know, I recently had the opportunity where it required me to have some very confidential one-on-one conversations, many of them, 50, 60 of them, right? Hour-long conversations. And I used to be perhaps one day good at, once upon a time, good at note-taking. I'm not anymore. And I want to have the conversation. So, you know, just having that transcription and having the notes of that confidential conversation, putting it all together into a, you know, repository, and then asking and probing the questions of that repository to make sure that you didn't miss anything, that make sure that there isn't any subconscious, you know, bias that's coming into that, like, you know, based on knowledge or whatever else. And it was incredibly, incredibly useful. And the results were shocking and surprising to me in terms of how good they were. And I think, you know, Ethan Mollick, he tells you about this 10-hour rule, right? That leaders need to go in and spend at least 10 hours with the technology before you can truly appreciate what it can do. Don't stop at the surface level. So I don't know if I'm there with the 10 hours or not, but certainly that is one thing that I think is really important for organizations to build that sustainable competitive advantage.
Yeah. Well, this has been a fascinating conversation. I think it's so valuable to have kind of these insights from the front lines. Any parting thoughts, hard-won lessons, ideas for the future that you want to leave us with?
I would say we're going to have uncertainties, short-term uncertainties, I would say, and market challenges that are going to come up. We are going through one such period right now. And the important thing is, this is, in my mind, a generational change in the company's prospects, in entire industries' prospects. So now is not the time, or really, I can't see a good time where you can take your foot off the gas. I think you have to have the sustainable investment in AI to make sure you're preparing yourself for the future. And the other point I would say is around agility. This is about making the organization more agile, more accepting of change, more tolerant of experimentation, reevaluating long-held beliefs, long-practice processes to try and change. If you can get that done, then any specific idea or any specific process automation becomes less significant because you've trained the entire organization to be agile, nimble, and able to take advantage of AI.
Great thoughts. Well, I can't even begin to imagine how different and evolved this conversation will be if we have it again in a year's time. But for now, really appreciate you sharing these insights and excited to see what the future holds.
Great. Thank you, Nathaniel.
This has been You Can With AI. Check out all 7 episodes and learn how you can better integrate AI into your organization today.